years ago, we tried to make a movie that was good, and it ended up being stupid. Now, we tried to make a movie that was stupid, and it ended up being, like, kinda low-key good. And welcome to the Zero Credits supplemental reading of 2024's Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, directed by Adam Wingard, starring Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Kaylee Hoddle, and Alex Ferns. I, as always, am your host, John.
And my name is Henry.
And if you've never listened to a Zero Credits supplemental reading before, it's where we experience something, usually by watching it, and we talk about it in its entirety. So from this point forward, spoilers abound. If you have not seen 2024's Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, directed by Adam Wingard, starring Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Kaylee Hoddle, and Alex Ferns, do so now before listening, or just don't care.
That's right.
You can choose not to care. It's fine if you don't.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about everything about this movie. We like Godzilla movies here on Zero Credits. And Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire is a movie.
It is certainly a movie. Now, of course, anyone who's been listening to the podcast for long enough knows that we enjoyed the interminable Summer of Godzilla with brief appearances by King Kong, limited King Kong appearances. Was the Summer of Godzilla in the depths of COVID?
It might have been. Don't press my memory. I've had COVID twice and I can't remember.
But the Summer of Godzilla's back in the spring of 2024 with the release of this titanic thriller of rapidly changing and adjusting proportions depending on what the shot requires.
Yes, the much like a Saturday morning cartoon, the very colorful Godzilla X King Kong, The New Empire, was a bit all over the place in terms of the scale of the monsters and the importance of the exposition.
Yes. I truly don't even know where to get started with this movie. Usually we have we have the ability to maybe take notes on a movie we're watching. We of course saw this together in the theater. So this is what I'm going to call a vibes forward supplemental reading, going mostly on feeling. We don't have quotes verbatim. We don't have a ton of facts because this movie just fucking came out 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. John doesn't have a lot of quotes or facts. I'm over here deep in the trenches of the IMDb trivia coming to you live from the field with quotes and facts from Adam Wingard, the director.
Adam Wingard is returning from directing Godzilla versus Kong in 2021, and I don't think Adam Wingard directed King of the Monsters. I think that was Michael Dougherty.
I'll do a quick fact check, but you are right. He did in fact film Godzilla versus Kong, and it seems before that he directed Death Note in 2017, Blair Witch in 2016, something called Outcast, also in 2016. It continues in this vein for a long time. It seems he's a horror director who was tapped to direct an anime adaptation and then went on to join the accolades of the MonsterVerse.
Now, of course, I think Adam Wingard also directed The Guest, which is kind of a sleeper hit Netflix movie I really loved, which started my appreciation for one Dan Stevens, who returns in this film. I don't know how much time we're going to spend talking about Dan Stevens. I love to see Dan Stevens getting work.
Dan Stevens is a certain individual who could be added to any property and immediately increases my enjoyment of that property. Case in point, the disgraced. The disgraced animator Justin Roiland was kicked off a show he co-created called Solar Opposites. And without explanation, they replaced him with Dan Stevens. And the show is much better.
Oh my God, replacing Justin Roiland with Dan Stevens is amazing. That's great. And I had no idea that happened. Yeah.
Dan Stevens does not treat his voice as he's not trying to match a Roiland. He is just talking with his own natural dialect, and the show is elevated from his performance. He fully commits to every role, and he's fully committing here to his character, whose name I know is Trapper.
Yes, the very a movie clearly is settling into its kind of Saturday morning cartoon isms when characters just have like one word noun names, as we get with Trapper. Also, to jump back a little bit, hold on. Improves everything you see him in, regardless of the property, and replaces disgraced creeps. Is Dan Stevens in the Tig Notaro verse?
They are of a similar caliber of performer, I believe, in this
Tig
one
Notaro and Dan Stevens, in this one instance, they make everything better and they replace creeps without explanation. Dan Stevens, yeah. Welcome to the Tig Club.
Now, I do want to back up and address your bon mot, how you open this episode. Could you repeat that verbatim for me?
I'll try to remember it. I think the top contour of it is the last movie was supposed to be good and it was stupid, and this movie was supposed to be stupid and it was kind of good.
This reflects a direct quote from director Adam Wingard, where he revealed in no uncertain terms that he wanted viewers to have a giddy blast this time around. He shared, "This movie is almost like a spoof of the last one. The last one was dead serious. And this time it was more fun to imagine what's it like when Bernie goes through it." So he played it from his perspective. It's almost very similar, almost shot for shot from the last movie, but it's a completely different feel.
Bernie goes through it? Oh, Brian Tyree Henry's character.
Yes, Bernie referring to what you just said, Brian Tyree Henry's character. Because last time the audience got to experience Hollow Earth, and it was played very seriously, very not for laughs. And this time we have a very comedic character, Bernie, going through the same thing. It's almost as if, in his own words, we're spoofing the last movie.
I like that a lot, and it does explain a lot of how this movie went from being an achingly serious movie that I truly don't remember in the Summer of Godzilla, where we came down on Godzilla versus Kong. In retrospect, I don't care for that movie much at all. I don't know if we liked it at the time. We tend to have like some recency bias for movies we've seen.
I think I might be able to look this up in our notes, but I think we were pretty harsh on it coming off of King of the Monsters, because King of the Monsters to us was sort of like, this is the height of Americanized Godzilla's, like Americans' understanding of Godzilla. And King Kong to us felt like maybe like a step back, because it just didn't cash in on everything that previous movie had built up.
Yeah, Godzilla King of the Monsters really felt like an American take on like a later era Godzilla movie. Like I liked King of the Monsters quite a bit. It definitely had its problems. But then Godzilla vs. Kong, achingly serious, real bummer to watch for a lot of different reasons. And I feel like the cast, the now significantly diminished cast, really got a chance to have fun in Godzilla X Kong. And this movie definitely has its problems, but when a movie is like so clearly laughing at itself, you kind of have to laugh with it. If you're both in on the joke, which it feels like that's what this movie was going for.
And you're speaking to a lot of the choices that Adam Wingard made specifically for this movie, because we are focusing on a smaller cast. There's no, in his words, there's no dual plot. I would disagree. I think there is a dual plot, and we can get into that. But he was of the mind of like, let's stick with one central cast of characters. Let's stick with their experience. Let's not try to do too much. And let's just kind of live in the world that big monsters exist. And we have to deal with it. Like almost taking the words straight out of characters' mouths, where it's like it's their world and we have to adapt. He was like, well, it's these people's stories and we're going to adapt everything around these people.
Yeah, I would maybe disagree with him saying that there isn't a dual plot, and also that the point of this movie is that big monster. Granted, I think that in this world, I like the level of like the anime level rationalization of just life continuing with the existence of giant monsters all the time. I like that we just brush past it. They're like, hey, there's monsters, cool.
Right. Yeah. Godzilla fights a huge bug in Rome, and it's just like, yeah, that's a thing that'll happen, and no other nation has developed a kaiju, titan, what have you, crushing weapon, so like Godzilla's here to fight it. This is normal.
Godzilla's the best we have. He sleeps in the Colosseum. It is what it is, which I appreciate. I do think that there was a dual plot in this movie, in that commendably, this is going to be like a compliment open face sandwich. Commendably, the movie actually does a really great job of handling Kong's storyline wordlessly. I think they do a really commendable job communicating a very broad, very simplistic story, but like in like a wordless way that really humanizes King Kong. Much like Godzilla vs. Kong was a King Kong movie, Godzilla X Kong is also a King Kong movie. But then the dual plot with the human people is horrible. Like, in my opinion,
yeah,
laughably horrible. Love Trapper. I love the existence of Trapper, but man, terrible writing for all the human stuff.
I would argue the dual plot is Kong and the humans in one sandwich.
Oh.
And the other plot, the B story, as it were, is Godzilla being pissed off and fighting everything that stands in his way and his never-ending quest to be strong enough to handle the world's problems.
Yeah, I think that I expressed this to you leaving the theater, is that with Kong, you get like all of it. You get like logos, pathos, ethos. You get everything with Kong. The entire hero's journey happens with Kong. So much is said and so much is done. There's transformation. There's change. And Godzilla's entire story is, come here, you son of a bitch.
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, Godzilla is, see you. I want to kill you.
Something woke me up and something must die before I go back to sleep. And it might as well be you, because you're right in front of me.
I want to get stronger. I'm going to go to the South Pole and kill a dragon to become pink to be stronger.
Yeah, I'm going to go through a powering up sequence that will take most of the movie. And then I will come back in a new form, much like an anime.
I really don't want to like draw too many cultural comparisons here where it may be insensitive, but Godzilla was on an anime arc. Like there was minimal overhead. It was a series of opponents. There was a long, like hyperbaric time chamber situation.
We were just
waiting for Goku/Godzilla to come out of the hyperbolic time chamber more powerful than he was before.
I mean, you don't want to draw cultural comparisons where they might be insensitive, but that didn't stop. Who is this? That didn't stop lead character designer Jared Kravinsky from doing that. He based this new pink power up off of the Kaioken from Dragon Ball Z.
Cool. Wait, does that mean in future movies we can see Super Saiyan Godzilla?
Yeah, maybe. If this lead character designer, whose name I instantly forgot, comes back.
I mean, let's be honest, as two people who, maybe you love Dragon Ball Z, the Kaioken looks cool. I appreciate that.
I love the Kaioken, and I thought, wow, this is the new standard. This is the new staple for Goku. He's going to Kaioken as much as possible. And then it came out every time he uses it, he cuts his life by a percentage. And I was like, oh, shit, we're never going to see that again. And then we never saw it again.
Yeah, we see it a little bit. He's like, Kaioken times 25. You're like, Goku, no.
Right.
Which is crazy, because then in the Cell Saga, they're like, he has a heart virus. Whereas they could have easily just said he Kaioken too much. His heart couldn't. Like, yeah. Why not bring that back? Why say he has a weird heart virus? I don't know.
The simple answer is that Akira Toriyama simply forgot, because that has happened time and time again.
Like most things, Dragon Ball Z has been going on for a while. Yeah. Akira Toriyama forgets things. Also, rest in peace, Akira Toriyama.
Rest in peace. But like, remember Launch? Neither does Akira Toriyama.
Launch, gone.
Yeah.
Comes back once every 5 years to say something.
Oh, I'm still here.
Hey, remember how there's God? Remember how there's literal God? Eh.
Oh, well. Yeah. But while we're continuing to draw cultural comparisons from Godzilla X Kong to New Empire to other things, I just want to touch briefly on the color palette of this film, which Adam Wingard said was inspired by the toy aisle in the 1980s, where you had Thundercats, G.I. Joe, and Transformers.
So I recently saw Poor Things for the first time.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie.
Everyone knows that movie is a mixture of black and white and color. And there's a specific point in the movie where it switches to color to be jarring. And that is how I felt watching Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Its color palette was jarring, in your face, super like bright and loud and warm at all times. I don't know. Sometimes it feels like you never see movies that are just like super duper colorful. And I appreciated that this movie like did really crazy shit with its color palette.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The color, the aesthetic of this movie is something that I really like. And it's that bullshit nostalgia 80s feeling where the music is Outrun based and the fonts are crazy and they look like, you know, what Thor Ragnarok tried to do with its poster. Like, this is my aesthetic. This is my peak. I love this shit.
And it's bright yellow.
Yeah, I felt like we could have dialed it up another notch, and I would have been like, "You got it." Like, don't hold back. Like, if you're going for toy aisle, go for two toy aisles. Like, just hit us over the head with the neon. I am here for it. I respect you, Adam Wingard, and your decision. But like, do lean into that shit.
Honestly, it makes me, well, I'll save that to the end of the episode. The color palette, I think my only criticism is sometimes when it's just like two human beings talking to each other inside a room and the color palette's still going wild. I'm like, oof,
yeah,
this person looks very orange in this shot. Otherwise, just I can't call them like gorgeous, because in my mind they weren't like very well considered to deliver any sort of emotion, but like brave, very brave color palette.
I feel like with like the information I'm finding about the decisions behind a lot of the direction of this movie, it all sort of clicks into place. Like, we're doing sort of a fun, giddy blast. We're doing a spoof of the last movie, so it's going to be more colorful. The tone is almost less serious, while the same matter is like the subject matter is still very held in. Like, this is very important. The stakes have never been higher. But at the meantime, it's like, but it's colorful and Godplex. It's colorful and Godzilla suplexes King Kong into the pyramids.
Yes, Godzilla suplexes. Here's the thing. I think what happened is to support all of this American Godzilla verse stuff, I think that there was so much contrivance that had to happen where like the screenwriters were looking at like, we're going to Hollow Earth, it's King Kong and Godzilla and Mothra, what are we doing? There's a thing in our property called Hollow Earth that we've just been taking seriously. Can you imagine the creative freedom we would have if we wrote a movie where the Hollow Earth is a thing, but we didn't take it seriously?
To the point where there's a subterranean level of the Hollow Earth.
There's the core of Hollow Earth.
We go deeper into the core of the Earth somehow.
Uh-huh. And also you need to like go into hyperspace to go into it's, you know, it's great. I feel like I don't even know where to start with the movie. Oh, so much I want to talk about.
We've started. We're in it.
Specifically, like the characterization of King Kong, who has so much more personality, who's a socialist king, who can't stand to see his people imprisoned. And then you have the Scar King, who has like incredible monster design. Like the Scar King is great, has like great, lanky, bad anime villain posture.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got the if it were possible, he would have a cigarette bud all the way, you know, burned and charred in his mouth.
Yeah, he's got like a big dagger licking energy.
Oh yeah, he's definitely the guy who like drips poison on his dagger and licks it or whatever to be more intimidating.
Yeah, there's just so much going on with the King Kong plot with the baby King Kong, which I didn't care for that much, but it added something to it.
Right.
I gotta say, watching Godzilla vs. Kong, which was primarily a King Kong movie, I'm like, I don't care about King Kong. In this movie, I like King Kong quite a bit.
So it's not a coincidence that you keep saying that, because according to director Adam Wingard, he views Kong and not Godzilla as the true main character of the MonsterVerse. While a fan of Godzilla, he admits that Kong is easier to relate to, stating, "You can't be as close to Godzilla as you can Kong," which I mean, bullshit.
Well, I think maybe the issue is like it comes down to their DNA, right? One's a lizard. No, like their DNA as characters is.
Well, the way
King
that
Kong
painted
is supposed to be seen as a sympathetic figure and is supposed to highlight mankind's inability to let nature be and our perverse desire to exploit and observe all the wonders of the world at great cost. And Godzilla is our punishment for living.
The way they're painted in the MonsterVerse, where Godzilla is like the quote-unquote guardian of nature and King Kong is sort of the guardian of humanity, is interesting, and I think it really sets up this dynamic of like, well, yeah, we can relate more to King Kong because there's more of a history there with him interacting with humans. King Kong comes to humans to get his tooth fixed in the movie, which Godzilla isn't asking for help. Godzilla's just like, point me at the nearest motherfucker that I can kill and absorb their power.
I mean, look, if you're going to tell me that King Kong is more relatable than Godzilla, did you watch any of those scenes where Godzilla sees a new thing to fight? It zooms in on his face and he does a little angry exhale through his nostrils because he knows he's going to have to kill it.
Yeah,
that's relatable.
That's relatable. I live that life every day.
Every time I see another human being, I narrow my eyes, I exhale through my nose, and then I run forward with my little arms extended so we can clash.
And I start charging my dorsal fin scales to release my radioactive breath, if you know what I'm
saying. Yeah,
you know what I'm
which for
about.
Me is just vomiting on people.
Me is
I just grapple with them. I grapple with them and I go, wom, 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 wom.
Godzilla x King Kong the New Empire.
What else is a there movie? To say?
What is a movie that I feel like commits one of the cardinal sins of movie making, in that you need a device, you need a literary story device in your film to, in one moment, explain everything that's going on in a way that is both impossible,
but makes total sense to the viewer, and they don't question it, except for me, who questions it every time.
The single moment of exposition in this movie is so laughably egregious for a couple different reasons. First of all, it's just uninterrupted explaining not only of events in the past, in the far past, that would tie Godzilla, this underground ape society, and King Kong together, but also explaining what has happened in the movie so far, and then also explains what will happen in the future.
Yeah. In one ancient temple of a room, these Yui people have chiseled out the entire script of the movie.
The entire script of the movie. And by the way, she's like, this whole room is covered in Iwi text. It's not. It's not.
It's just pictures.
The Iwi texts are pictures. Like three super specific pictographs.
Yeah. Like the camera pans over the text and it's literally just like, as we're hearing voiceover from Rebecca Hall, we're seeing the still of the thing, and then we cut to it actually happening. It's like, this is, you're not reading anything. You're interpreting pictures. And the fact, like, I honestly, a better explanation would have been like, oh yeah, no, we also are connected to the telepathy people and they're telling us what's going on.
So much easier. So much easier.
But yeah, we have.
Here's the thing. My problem with the exposition is a perfectly fine alternative to that exposition is literally to not have it at all.
Right.
Because we actually, going into the movie, we know everything we need to know so far, which is Godzilla wants to fight everything he sees. King Kong discovered his people that had been buried underground for some reason and found a villain that has control of what appears to be another thing similar to Godzilla. Like, and the rest of the movie doesn't need any of the exposition that's laid out there whatsoever. It only exists to tangentially tie Godzilla to the events of what happened to the apes.
Right.
It's the only reason. In my opinion, in the script, it exists to be like, oh, so Godzilla is going to be like sympathetic to King Kong's plight or whatever. And that's not what happens. Mothra just convinces Godzilla to. So keep it all and lose the exposition. We have everything we need.
The fascinating thing about the exposition is it does not at all affect the human side of the story in any way, shape, or form. They just have this knowledge now, but they're not like, oh, we need to find a way to get Godzilla down here. It's like, no, King Kong decided on his own. He's going up to bring him down. Like, yeah. At no point do they ever actually, like, does having the knowledge that they have inform their decisions? It's just like, oh no, but we understand everything that's going on. So we can say it out loud so the audience can understand it too.
Yeah.
And this movie does it. And there's another movie that, series that does this, which is unfortunately the Da Vinci Code series of films. They both do this, and it's just the biggest sin of not trusting your audience, and you feel like you have to recap everything that's happening. But we don't need to understand that Godzilla's going up to get King Kong to come down. We would have just understood that because it's exactly what happens in the movie.
We just see it happen. What's crazy is like the screenwriting credo of show, don't tell. They took a strange Buddhist third path where they show and tell. They show it happening and they literally tell you what's happening. It's insulting almost.
It is. It's hitting you over the head with like, this is what's happening in the movie.
On their cell phone in an AMC theater who's not paying attention, it looks up, it's like, what is happening right now?
Right. It's for that person. That scene is for that person. And you make a good point. Cut that scene from the movie, and I don't think you hurt the movie at all. In fact, you might improve it with a shorter runtime.
Listen, the humans give something great to the movie, which is they give King Kong his rocket fist, which I have some notes about the rocket fist.
I have some notes about the montage in which we are introduced to the fist and then it is equipped to King Kong within 2 minutes.
Yes, because he has to travel to go get it. And they're all just standing in the same place they were standing in before.
Right. There's a lot of things that are very questionable about everything that happens in this sequence. Because they have a security guy whose name is, I have it right here. His name is Mikael. He's played by Alex Ferns. I really love the security guy.
The incredible Alex Ferns from Andor.
I really love a security guy. I love that this one was Scottish. He's just like a no-nonsense, no-bullshit guy. And he's the only one, presumably, who can fly the little craft they're in, and he dies. And it's like, oh, this is going to be a big deal. They no longer have a pilot. No. Turns out Trapper can fly anything.
Yeah. So who cares?
And then I want to lay out specifically how we are introduced to the Beast, which is the name of his glove. There's like a shared line. It's like, oh no, he's going to need some help. And Trapper's like, we could go get Project whatever.
Power Load or whatever it's called.
Yeah. And he's like, it was almost done when they pulled the funding. And that's the line I take umbrage with the most, because he just goes, gets it, equips it, and turns it on, and it doesn't seem like it needs any fine-tuning or anything. That's not the project's funding was pulled before they could be completed. That's the project's funding was pulled because it was fucking done.
The project's funding was pulled. We just needed $5 more to spray paint a logo on something.
We needed to borrow one of our loaders that we have like 10 of that we move heavy things around the bases with. That's all we needed.
Yeah, I love the idea that like they have access to this thing. Here's my issue with the Beast, if that's what it's called.
It is what it's called, and it stands for something too, and I'll never find it, so just move on.
The B, a strong, tough. Issue I have with it is if you're going full anime, right?
Bio-enhanced anatomic seismic thunder.
Great. Seismic thunder. Amazing.
Sorry.
I'm just saying, like, if you're going full anime, this is what I want. King Kong's hand, done. Kaput. Has to be replaced.
Oh, cut it off.
Cut it off. Well, he's out. Put the glove on. Rocket fist. Shoots
Hell
it like a rocket.
Yeah.
Shoots
Hell
it like
yeah.
a rocket. That's cool. Like it's Mecha Godzilla stuff. It's classic Godzilla era rocket fist stuff. It's anime homage. It's fun.
I feel like it's right in line with the 80s cartoon or 80s toy aisle kind of vibe they were going for. Absolutely.
Like how cool would it be if like. And also, they show the fist doing, like, way cooler stuff when he's, like, punching the ground and, like, otherwise he's just, like, punching people with it. I'm like, make it a rocket fist. You have so much cool stuff in that last fight where, like, he can, like, do the rocket fist and, like, it's surprising that that happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an American movie. We love a shot, reverse shot of a character doing something then being surprised that they did it. Have the rocket fist happen and then have King Kong learn in real time and be surprised by the fact that the rocket fist happened.
Plus,
it's fun.
It's a really great equalizer between our two titular characters.
Yeah, now he's got a ranged weapon.
Exactly. One of the biggest advantages Godzilla has over King Kong is the ranged beams. This was a way to kind of bring them together closer in level. And like, it's a power-up movie, so like, let's put them on equal footing, finally. And I don't think that messes with the plot that much, because Kong would still be going up against two things if he didn't have Godzilla on his side.
Yeah.
You need the two and two. I think this is a better way to sort of like get Kong. Kong should get Kong to knock out Godzilla to drag him toward the portal would be cooler if it was right after the rocket fist.
Yeah, and then you know they're on the same level. They're both equally powerful. And then, to really bring it home, when the Scar King loses the control of Shiva, is that the Ice Godzilla?
Its actually name is Shimo.
Shimo, really?
Yeah, Shimo.
Well, when he loses control of Shimo, Shimo freezes the Scar King, and then, like, Godzilla and King Kong look at each other. He's frozen. He's standing there. King Kong shoots the rocket fist. Godzilla shoots the atomic breath. They both hit him at the same time, and he explodes. Tag team finisher.
Yeah.
Flawless victory. Do that shit.
Absolutely. Shimo is a Japanese word meaning frost or gray hair. But yeah, absolutely. The name also means hole or abyss in Swahili.
Oh.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I said I love the monster designs. I actually really don't like Shimo's design. I don't want to hate on Shimo.
I do a tiny bit. I want to hate on Shimo because time and time again in this MonsterVerse cinematic universe, I am teased with, we are going in the deep back catalogs of the Toho extended monster lineup. And time again, they're like, but we decided to just make our own. And every time it happens, it's a little disappointing to me personally, who grew up with all of the different monster movies that came on like the Sci-Fi Channel before it was a Sci-Fi Channel. Uh-huh. Like, just pick one, you know, and go. I get it's like, oh, he's got a power similar to Godzilla. There's like 100 monsters that have a similar power to Godzilla. Pick one from the past. Shimo is okay, I guess, but like that could have been a Angora, you know?
Yeah, I think like if you want it, when it was coming out, I'm like, oh, is this going to be like a Baragon or something? Like, right. Is this going to be like another lizardy kind of, ooh, or like a Biollante would be great.
I said the Anguirus apparently is a giant rabbit. I meant Anguirus.
Anguirus. Oh, man. I feel like if it's Anguirus, it would be an Anguirus movie.
Well, I thought it was going to be a twist, you know? The Scar King is.
Oh, built, yeah. You thought know, the Scar King was the bad guy, but it's actually right. Anguirus.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead, we got, the Scar King subjugates the Shimo character, who, when it's freed, it's just like, well, I guess I'm going back to where it's hot. I loved it there.
I just thought it would be, cool if, like, it was like a Biollante, because then it's like, they're in the Hollow Earth where it's all plants and stuff. There's a plant Godzilla down there.
Right. That would have been cool, too.
I mean, Biollante is cool. That's the issue is like every Toho monster comes with its own price tag.
I get that, but I mean, they brought back at least one of them. They brought back Mothra, and yes. I was so glad to see Mothra come back because I even though they didn't do the song, which is fine.
You could have done the song. I love to see Mothra back. I love to see continued evidence that Godzilla and Mothra are in love and listen to each other. They love each other.
The closest thing Godzilla does to smile is when Mothra's on screen.
Yeah. And then maybe my favorite part of the movie is Godzilla sees King Kong and is like, I'm going to fucking kill you because that's what I do. I see guys and I fight guys.
This is my whole arc. I just fight. I am a living tournament arc.
And then for some reason, Mothra like gets the whole situation that's going on. It's like, hey, Godzilla, you have to be nice to King Kong. Godzilla, I think in that moment, is so mad that he does a Point Break and shoots his atomic breath into the sky like Keanu Reeves in Point Break.
Yeah.
It's great.
There are some really great scenes. This one pyramid fight, I feel like, is really like the center pole for the movie for me. Because Godzilla sees King Kong and is like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
And like, it's such a cool move for me, I guess, to see King Kong like, hey, wait. And he's like, he's pointing behind him. He's like, I don't want to fight you. Like, it's not immediately like we're going to kill each other. You know, like, oh, I already knew I was going to have to beat this guy into following me. He starts out trying to plead, like, hey, wait, no, there's another situation in this hole I came out of.
He's like, hey, Godzilla, real quick, I know we want to kill each other. There is something more pressing happening. Please.
Right. Like, we can fight later. But also, I've got these people now, and I kind of want to be around for them. So, like, maybe we don't fight.
Maybe not. It's so cool to make them fight in the pyramids. Probably the least engaging, like, fight in the movie is when they go back into Hollow Earth and they fight in that, like, I don't know, when the monsters are, this is where some of the most egregious, like, scale cheating happens in the movie.
Yeah.
I think when kaiju are fighting in a place where there's nothing for scale, it just kind of feels like the... What am I trying to say? Like the stakes.
When they're not fighting in a city.
Mm-hmm. When they don't feel big, it feels like there aren't stakes and they're just like weird creatures fighting in a place that's like just totally devoid from like familiarity with the regular world. And there's just like big crystal pyramids and the gravity gets all weird. I'm like, I could go to sleep right now.
I'm glad for the move where the final part of that fight happens in the real world. Because one, it shows what's really at stake. There's like a throwaway line like, oh, Shima was responsible for the last ice age. And it's like, okay. Like, sure. You know, I'll take that at face value, I guess, but I'm pretty sure like the position of the earth and the sun had more to do with, but sure, I'll take that at face value. But then we actually see like the water freezing is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just the
shot where like they go from Hollow Earth to above Earth and you're riding in the tube of a wave that's slowly freezing. And then the camera turns upside down to show them falling out of the sea. Also, when it cuts to above world, it just shows like Cristo Redentor in Rio. It's great. It's a very solid transition. The water freezing was very cool. Shimo freezes the clouds.
Yeah. Like all of this shows. Yeah. Again, like this is real world stakes. We're not fighting in a crystal pyramid. And it lends back the weight to these huge fucking creatures. If a kaiju is fighting something and it's not plowing through a building every step, you know, we have no sense of scale. There's no way around it, you know?
I mean, it does always... I really appreciate when kaiju are in cities because that's when it feels right. And that's when you can do the like really impressive filming around them. It does make us think the unsavory thoughts you have watching kaiju fight, which is like Godzilla stomps through an apartment building to tackle somebody. You're like, hundreds of people lived in there.
Yeah, no, it's hard to think. It's funny with the advent of the superhero movie, how many superheroes fights end up in cities, and you're like, well, Superman must have known there was nobody in that building before he crashed
through it,
right? Like, we kind of justify it in our heads. Watching a kaiju movie, it's like they just wiped out like 100 families in that apartment complex. Like, there's no way to justify it.
I mean, they're living in a world, and they're totally happy to be living in a world where they're like, Godzilla had a fight in the city, 5 9/11s happened, but it could have been so much worse.
Right. Like, there's even, like, some throwaway dialogue where it's like, oh, Rome is on the line, they're pissed. It's like, well, tell Rome if Godzilla didn't intervene, there wouldn't be a Rome. And it's just like, yeah, I guess that's what they mean by Titans are here and it's their world. We just have to sort of accept ungodly amount of death tolls on a very regular basis.
Yeah. I mean,
and we hand wave it.
It could have been if they didn't hand wave it, they could take another page from the book of anime and have King Kong sign to the Scar King, we can't fight here. There are people. Meet me in a desert that's 2 miles away.
Yeah, we got to go fight in the wasteland that spans forever, where every major DBZ fight happened for like 2 arcs.
Yeah, and that's where Godzilla Kaioken's.
Yep, and there's a sign that says like where Gohan trained Valley. That's the name of the valley.
where Piccolo blew up the moon. a surprising amount of DBZ chat here. I have a bone to pick with Kaioken Godzilla.
The pink one?
The pink one.
Yeah, what's up?
We went through that whole like Godzilla's powering up arc, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that we got sufficient evidence that Godzilla was much more powerful than he was before.
This is a very good point, because I feel like in one of the previous movies, and I put a gun to my head and I wouldn't be able to name it, but I feel like in one of the previous movies in the MonsterVerse, Godzilla got to a point where he could no longer contain his radiation, and like blasts were emanating from his entire body. And like this cool, like he's overpowering, like he might even self-destruct. And I feel like that was way more powerful than Pink Godzilla.
Yeah, that was King of the Monsters, I think.
See,
I think it was King of the Monsters after the Doctor sacrificed himself and set off a nuke to wake Godzilla up or whatever.
Right. He was supercharged then.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. This one, it's like, well, I guess his radioactive breath was a little more magma-y to a degree.
Yeah, it was like a little nastier. I'm just saying, like, if you put that much time into like Godzilla's really powering up, I'm gonna say, I know I keep trying to punch up the script for this movie to make it my movie, but have like Godzilla get real crazy, real pink, eyes are glowing, wum 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 all the way up the tail, opens his mouth for atomic breath, nothing comes out for a second. And then it's like a laser, like right. It's like super concentrated, like Shin Godzilla stuff.
Yeah.
And
so that's
scary.
That's what came to mind. Like, don't do the super jaw dropping move from Shin Godzilla. But yeah, the very precise beam version of the atomic breath. I don't think that could ever be beat in terms of like that is Godzilla is most powerful.
Yeah, like make that happen. Make it make a sonic boom. You know what? Make it happen, and then cut to a wide shot of the fucking Earth and show the beam leaving the Earth. Like do full DBZ stuff if you want to make Godzilla look very cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm in total agreement. Yeah, I feel like. So if you want to know some stats that are kind of upsetting, Godzilla only has about 8 minutes of screen time in this movie where his name comes first.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It's the least amount of screen time in the MonsterVerse thus far. It's 3 minutes less than Godzilla vs. Kong, which was at 11 minutes, and 2 minutes less than Godzilla King of the Monsters, which was 10 minutes. And tied King of the Monsters and Godzilla are tied at 10 minutes. So it's just like we don't get a lot of Godzilla in this movie that starts with his name.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we've discussed, these are King Kong movies. It seems like Adam Wingard is in agreement with us. It's just, it's a shame because we're big Godzilla fans. And I think there's so much more they can do with the character.
I want to discuss sort of a out of movie experience that I think lended to us enjoying this movie a little bit. And it's going to be a crazy thing that I cannot prove or disprove. So here's a hypothetical. Had there been no Godzilla Minus One, I feel like we would be a lot more harsh on this movie.
Oh, 100%. I hadn't thought of that, but that's so right.
I think we ate so well. We were fed so well by Godzilla Minus One. And it was such a serious and one of the best Godzilla movie probably ever made in my estimation. And I think we devoured that so thoroughly that we were like, give me like a little amuse-bouche. Give me a lighter fare Godzilla movie. And this delivered on all fronts.
I think you're totally right, because when I would see the trailer for this movie before other movies at Alamo Drafthouse, I would like grimace. Because yeah. I think it was pretty clear at the end of the Summer of Godzilla, I am anguished over the state of what I believe to be the future of one of my favorite properties, which is Godzilla. It seemed like it was being put in this really unfortunate low-grade action movie place where all of the like importance and artistry and history associated with Godzilla were being totally forgotten. And after seeing Godzilla Minus One, I saw the trailer for this and I was like, that looks fun. Like, my opinion totally changed after seeing Godzilla Minus One.
I had such a visceral reaction to the trailer for Godzilla X King Kong, the New Empire. And it was just that one shot of Godzilla and King Kong running together side by side toward the camera. And what I can only describe as like the superhero run sequence.
Of course, which is also the poster for the movie.
Right. I took one look at that and I was like, I will not see this movie. I just made a decision right then and there. I don't want to see it. I don't think I'm going to like anything that this movie has to offer. Then I saw Godzilla Minus One, saw the trailer again. I was like, well, I'm kind of curious about what they would do.
Yeah, like it really did like wash a ton of negativity out of my mind, because I knew that, I mean, especially coming off of Godzilla Minus One winning an Oscar and getting like tons of acclaim stateside, I felt like the future of the Godzilla that I love is secure, so this other thing can also exist.
Right. Like, we're going to get, to be very reductive about it, we're going to get art house Godzilla from Toho directly. Like, there are stirrings and rumors about sequels and continuing, like, the Minus One sort of line of thought, and that is super exciting. And on the other hand, we've got the Saturday morning version of cartoon that Americans have come to love, and it's successful. Like, it's already made $300 million+ on a $135 million budget. Like, it is good in the box office, and we enjoyed it. Therefore, I don't want it to not continue.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the dichotomy you set up in that there's a dichotomy, and like there's a world where as a child I loved Godzilla movies and I loved the serious big Godzilla movies. I also loved the literal reruns of the Saturday morning cartoon version of Godzilla. I loved them both for different reasons. One was tacky and dumb and had Godzuki and had Up from the Depths, 30 stories high, breathing fire. Like, it's great.
Godzilla.
I liked both, and I can like both now.
I think Godzilla is bigger than the sum of its parts. It contains multitudes. There is room for both. I don't think I would be this accepting of it without having that serious, very good art house version of Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One. I feel like I would have watched this movie and would have been left hungry and wanting. Especially with no end credits scene for the first time in the MonsterVerse series, and with no stirrings of a sequel on the horizon. But because I have been fed the meals I have been fed, I am sated in this moment.
Yeah. Godzilla is a changeable feast.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might have to rate this movie.
Yeah, on the Zero Credits official supplemental reading rating scale, which we all remember and love, and I have a picture of somewhere.
Yes, of course it is. On the positive side, we should really do this in descending order, but we don't. In the ascending order on the positive side is there's like it, love it, and gotta have more of it. And then, of course, between the two states, there exists the null state where we have no opinion about the media whatsoever, which I don't know that we have ever actually given a movie before. I was actually,
but it is necessary, though. It is necessary.
I was excited going into this movie that this might be our first null state supplemental reading, but alas, it is not the case. And then on the other side, in descending order, so think -1, -2, etc., we have dislike it, loathe it, gotta have less of it.
Yes, exactly. I do have an image of that somewhere, but I have no idea where it is. I'm so sorry.
I think I can go with my rating first, if that's okay.
That's fine with me.
So I think it's no secret that I enjoyed this movie. And I think I might be breaking new ground here. I think my rating is a love it with like, I could watch more of it. You know?
Okay.
I loved how they pulled out of the tailspin of the previous movie. Once again, if Godzilla Minus One had not come out in the last 6 months, I don't know that I think my opinion would be much, much worse. I think I loved watching it. It's dumb as fuck. It knows what it is. I can't hate it. And if another one showed up, I'd watch it. I don't know that I gotta have more of it. If it ended here, I wouldn't be dissatisfied. But if another one showed up, I would watch it.
And a lot of ways, Godzilla X Kong. It's just Kong?
It's just Kong. You've been saying Godzilla X King Kong this whole time, but it's just Kong.
I hate it. Now, in a lot of ways, Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, feels like a natural conclusion for some of the characters. Maybe the titular monster of the MonsterVerse, King Kong himself. So I agree. I don't know if I need to have more of it. I loved watching it. Thinking back about it, maybe I could say I liked it. I'm somewhere in between liked and loved. So let's just round up and say I loved this movie, and I'm kind of on the same page. If more of this ilk came out while we were still getting that good prime rib, I don't know what's a good cut of meat, the filet mignon out of Japan, Kobe beef. If we were still like, if we still get Godzilla Minus One caliber films, and this is alongside of it, I'm right there for it. I would watch it. If one of these things fall off, then I don't know if I need more of it. I think I'm saying the same thing that you're saying in a less succinct way.
If there's more good Godzilla, this is a great supplement. If the good Godzilla falls off, fuck these movies.
Right, exactly. Like, if this is all we had, if the original deal between Legendary Pictures / WB and Toho were still in effect, where for some reason Toho agreed to not make a Godzilla movie for, like, 5 years, if that was still in effect, I'd hate these movies. I would say, like, this is not, they don't understand Godzilla at all. And I would take umbrage with the fact that Godzilla's name is first and it's a King Kong movie. I would have a long list of gripes, but I am sated. Because Godzilla Minus One was so good. And so I can't help but say I smiled from ear to ear during a lot of the scenes of this movie. And that must mean I loved it.
Fascinating to think how this movie could be could be both a movie that we both admit to loving and, depending on the macro environment, a cancer on our favorite franchise. Fascinating. Yeah. Real quick, I just wanted to say that Dan Stevens studied English literature at Emmanuel College, Cambridge. While at Cambridge, he was a member of the Footlights with Stefan Guslowski, Tim Kaye, and Mark Watson, and was also active in the Marlowe Society. He was first spotted at a Marlowe Society production of Macbeth, in which he played the title character alongside Rebecca Hall.
Holy shit, this was a reunion?
This was a reunion from their college days in the Footlights. Well, I don't know if Rebecca Hall was in the Footlights, but she was certainly in the Marlowe Society. So good on them. We watched something truly magical happen here on the screen.
And King Kong got a big fist. And I think with that, there's nothing left to do but to thank you for listening to this supplemental reading. I'm going to let John let you know how to get in contact with us.
That's right. If you'd like to let us know how much you loathe this movie or liked it or didn't see it, really, we'll take anything. Talk to us about other Godzilla movies. Between the two of us, I think we've seen most of them and are probably confident enough to talk about them. Love to talk Godzilla. on Elon Musk's, the Elon Musk snakes, x.com, formerly Twitter. We are at ZCPCWHJ on x.com. And I believe my friend Henry knows what that stands for.
That stands for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, Original Motion's Picture Soundtrack is available on Spotify.
Tom Hulkenborg. You can send us an email to zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com. Let's hope they don't take Gmail away, right? If you're listening to this podcast, congratulations. There are other ways to do that, too, if your friends want to, such as Good Pods, Podchaser, not Google Podcasts anymore, friggin' Amazon Podcasts, TikTok Podcasts, Apple Podcasts / Music, and Spotify. Great people. You know what? I'll roll with it. A great people once said, the best way for people to learn about the show is for you to leave a rating or a review on your podcast app of choice, but ideally Spotify. But the best way for people to learn about the show is for you to charge up your tail and wom, 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 tell them about the Zero Credits podcast, or hit him with your big robotic lightning fist that should have been a rocket, because word of the mouth is the only way we can survive. Atomic breath of the mouth, even.
And from everyone here at the Godzilla X King Kong : The New Empire Zero Credit Studios, we just want to wish you a fulfilling resolution to your personal story, because if you're a human in a Godzilla movie, Monsterverse movie, you sure aren't getting one. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Dan Stevens boarded on a scholarship at Tonbridge School, a private school in Kent. There, he became interested in drama after auditioning for the title role in Macbeth with his teacher, novelist Jonathan Smith. From the age of 15, he spent his summers training and performing with the National Youth Theatre in London. I was really hoping that I could read another paragraph again and end on a bombshell, but it looks like no.
He was in Romeo and Juliet alongside King Kong?
A reunion for the ages.